time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday, the 14th of July, 2012. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirawa. On Saturday the 14th of July, Sharon Brown talked to Nicola Hambley of Aotearoa Insurance, social commentator Alan Knight, and thespians Lucinda and Bridget Peterkin.
Got Nicola Hambley, who's just come into the studio. Hi, Nicola, how are you doing?
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, good. So you've had a big night last night?
I have, yeah. Bella's 18th birthday, so I'm feeling a little bit slow today.
No, that's good. I'm here.
Yeah. And I didn't pull a sickie, so.
Well done. Yeah. And so what was that like? How many kids did you have over?
We had about 60 kids and vodka shots, and it was good, actually. Really, really good. Really well behaved, so. Yeah.
Nice. Good. Yeah, yeah. It's quite daunting now, I think, organising kids' parties. Did you have bouncers?
We got security in.
Yeah. See, that's such a strange concept, isn't it? I think from, you know, growing up, you know, having bouncers at parties. But yeah, they always do now, don't they?
Oh, I think it's a good idea. And it takes the pressure off the kids as well, knowing that there's someone there.
Great. Okay. So Nicola, you work in insurance, is that right?
I am a registered financial advisor, so I work in insurance. And I'm a mortgage broker as well.
Right, okay. And so one of the things that you wanted to talk about today was how people can reduce their ACC claims.
Yeah.
And I guess...
And levies, really.
And levies, okay.
ACC
levies. Yes, sorry, I meant levies.
I mean, ACC is compulsory insurance, so you have to have it. It pays out on accident. It will pay out 80% of your income, your net income. People don't realise that there are two types of ACC that you can choose. The normal ACC Cover Plus. Now, ACC Cover Plus is the standard ACC that most, I suppose, most people just automatically go on. Am I not doing it properly?
No,
is it moving around?
No, I just thought
Sorry,
you liked...
Sorry, guys, first time on the radio.
I just thought you liked looking at me, so I thought instead of making it difficult
like
for you to...
You're yes. looking very, very good today.
Yes, thank you.
You're looking lovely.
Thank you, my dear. So I thought I would move the mic so that you can look
nice.
At me and talk at the same time.
So there are two types of ACC. So there's ACC Cover Plus and there's ACC Cover Plus Extra. If you are self-employed or a shareholder in... employee, you are eligible to go on ACC Cover Plus Extra. Now, ACC Cover Plus Extra is 100% agreed value. So you can nominate an amount that you want covered. So you can nominate anything from 21,632 up to $88,000 or $89,000 of cover. Now, this is where savings can be made. If you're on... So say if you're earning a net income of 60,000 and you're in a high occupation industry, so your levies are going to be high, like building or painting, you can opt to reduce your ACC levies to 21,632, making savings, obviously, by having less cover. Now, you're going to create more risk by having less cover, but you can marry that up with private protection. So you've got your ACC cover reduced, and then you've got private protection that covers illness, accident, lump sum payouts for serious illnesses, you know, your rehab benefits paid for. Just, I mean, these policies are absolutely amazing. So rather than go the ACC way, you can do ACC and private protection. Make savings on ACC and obviously put the money elsewhere. Some people may want to go on Cover Plus Extra and may not be able to get private protection. Now, again, if you're self-employed, it's a no-brainer. I mean, there was a case of a farmer down, I think it was in the Waikato, and he was on Cover Plus Extra. He nominated 60,000 on Cover Plus Extra. He didn't go the private way as well. That was his choice. He had an accident. On Cover Plus Extra, you can work part-time and you still get that 100% agreed value. They're not going to reduce your ACC by any earnings you make. So he couldn't work on his farm anymore. He got the 100% of the 60 grand, got someone else to work on the farm, and they didn't reduce his ACC cover by how much money was coming in. So
right.
Either way, it's better cover.
Okay. So if you're self-employed, you're recommending the ACC Plus cover.
Cover Plus Extra.
And then, so what would the difference be in premiums? Like, say you were covering yourself for $20,000 or you were covering yourself for $60,000. What difference would that make in terms of what you're paying ACC?
It all depends on your occupation class.
Oh, well, say a high, you know, high danger occupation like building.
Okay, so building. Okay, so say if I reduce... I'm just trying to think off the top of my head. 21,632 for a builder might be around $1,200 per annum compared to $3,500 for.
Okay.
So you're looking at a couple of $1,000s a year.
Right, which can be quite useful.
Which
not to
does
be
make a difference,
out.
Yeah. I mean, there's other ways of reducing ACC for companies with over 10 employees. You. Basically can go for extra safety discounts, workplace safety discounts, and for high occupation codes like building again, electrical work, plumbing, grape growing, agriculture, fisheries, they can apply for workplace safety discounts as well.
Mm.
So there's a lot that you can do with ACC. There's a lot of people on the wrong code.
Right.
A lot of people are on the wrong
codes.
Oh, so
for example, they're a builder, but they're being, you know, they're being...
They might be project managing.
Oh,
they might own a building company and they might be project managing and they should be on a project management code. They might be a husband and wife team and the wife's actually just doing admin.
So
on Cover Plus Extra, the builder can be under the building code and the wife can be under the admin, you know, the admin code. I mean, there's lots of savings that can be done there with ACC. I mean, it's quite interesting, really.
Right.
And it's definitely worth researching and it's definitely worth talking to someone about it.
Mm.
I mean, just on the codes and being on the wrong codes, I've had refunds of $2,000-$3,000 for people that didn't realise that they shouldn't have been on, say, something like, I'm just going to say hypothetically, grape growing. They should have been on, restaurant management or something like that.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah. And so you can get it retrospectively. You can say, like, for the last 3 years I've been on the wrong code.
Yeah. And you can get it backdated as well.
Right.
It is on a case-by-case issue, but I work closely with ACC. I'm on the phone to them constantly.
They must love you.
I know, it's hard sometimes.
Yeah. Okay, it's worth getting that all managed for you. Yeah, totally. Yeah. And then you were saying, well, you know, so say you made, say, you know, hypothetically $2,000 saving, but then if you got private cover, wouldn't that be pretty much paying the same amount again? Or would the private cover be...
You may pay the same amount again, but with the private cover you're covering illness. And to be honest, your ability to work, I mean, people insure their houses, they insure their boats, they insure their cars, they don't insure their ability to work. You know, for a 20-30 year old to not have an income protection cover in place is just absolutely mad. It's madness. Everyone should have income protection that's working,
right?
Because your work is your, you know, it's your life, it's your asset, it's your main asset.
Your house
isn't your main asset, your ability, your health is your main asset.
Yeah,
100%.
Yeah, it's quite interesting talking to you about that, because I know you feel really strongly about that.
I feel really strongly about
but you actually need to have employment to be able to do that, presumably.
Not necessarily, because there are different types of income protection. There's also mortgage protection. Now, mortgage protection will naturally become an agreed value income protection. So if you're looking at, say, when income protection will only pay out 75% of the best year in the last 3 years, and I'm finding in a lot of cases some people are overinsured in income protection. They've got policies, because a lot of people are self-employed in the island. A lot of people bring their income down. So they're bringing their income down, their net income, to $20,000, $25,000, but they're actually earning heads 50-60 grand. So they've gone to the bank saying, this is how much I earn, but when they go to claim, and, you know, Tower, Sovereign, AXA, whomever looks at their accounts, they're not going to get what they have been paying for. So it should be reviewed. It should be reviewed on a yearly basis. And something like mortgage protection would be better, because it's not on the, for someone that's self-employed, it's on the mortgage rather than on the income.
Right.
So it doesn't matter if the income's minus, they'll still get the payout. So again, it's seeing someone, reviewing all the time. You've got to review all the time with insurance, and people don't do it and they don't realise, and then all of a sudden they've got, you know, premiums that are spiralling out of control because they haven't realised they're going up with age and they haven't fixed some in or seen their advisor, just to, you know, recap on it.
God, it's just another aspect of your life you need managed by someone else, isn't it? Because it just seems like a minefield to try and negotiate all of that on your own.
Yeah.
Unless you need a degree in
You've got to trust your advisor. You've got to do some research on them. You've got to know that, I mean, we're here for claims. That's what I'm here for. I'm here so my clients know that they can come into my office, they don't have to phone a number, they can come in, they can put the receipts down and I will deal with everything and they don't have to do anything at all. That is my job.
Really. Well, that's it's really useful to run if you around. Do get hurt or something happens or whatever and you need help.
Totally.
That's the last time you want to
The most stressful time of someone's life is when they get a serious illness. And to know that your advisor's going to come, you know, knock on the door with a check saying, here we go, and do all the work for you, is, you know, it's gold dust.
So, Nicola, how did you get into this? Because I know you're quite interested in it. You're genuinely interested in it.
Yeah, I am. I love it.
How did you get into it? I mean, it's a strange sort of area to fall into.
I basically, about 10 years ago, I was office managing at a financial services firm, Curry Financial Services, I just loved the job. And within about a year and a half, the kids were quite young then, so I waited a little while. He mentored me and I started advising and doing all the courses. And I worked in town for a number of years. When I came to the island, I stopped for a while. Just did the island thing, hung out with the kids, had a few things happening in my life where I couldn't do the job. And circumstantial things, and then just got back into it, started studying again.
Yeah, because I remember always seeing you as a mum with kids, and then it was always like, you know, financial advising, blah blah blah, and I was like, where did this come from?
Into
this? Has she just studied it or what?
I've got my own company on the island, and I'm mentoring someone else into the industry now. I'm doing heaps of stuff, actually. I'm mortgage breaking as well. I'm setting up a call centre on the island. I saw an article in the paper just on people leaving and the lack of work, and mums leaving and families having to leave the island. And I just got this spark of an idea of, okay, why don't we bring not the corporate world here, but why don't we provide a service for the... Hello.
Alan Knight has just wandered in. Hello, Sir Alan.
Hello.
Yep.
Sorry, what was I saying?
You're still on air.
Am I? Hello, hello.
Are you looking for this, Alan? Alan's reaching
Alan's
out. Must
here.
Be for
Alan's
a
come in and
yes.
Alan's doing
okay.
something.
So basically, you set up a call centre.
So I've set up a call centre. It's all set up and it's ready to go. I am at the moment, next week, next Thursday, we're going to put it out to... we're going to put 20 pilot programs out to advisors in town. We're going to give it away at a sort of seminar series that a big union group's doing, and we're going to probably get it up and running in about 3-4 weeks time, so we're going to start advertising for jobs. But the idea is, I mean, Waiheke's known for vineyards, it's known for it's just known for its beauty and all that sort of stuff. But this is going to bring something different to Waiheke. It's going to show the corporate world that they don't have to go to Bangalore.
they can get cheap labour on Waiheke
Island. So
as
we're going to give it
bounce babies on their knees and try and change nappies. Well, I guess the smell doesn't go down the phone, eh?
Exactly. And it's definitely not going to be a cold calling thing. I'm not into that. It's actually, I mean, with the financial services industry, legally we have to contact clients every year. You have to, if you haven't had contact from your advisor's not doing a good job.
Okay.
You should find an advisor that is. You should have contact every single year. You should review and see them every 2 years.
Right.
Now, because of the new Act in 2008 states that, and some advisors in town have 2,000 clients, how are they going to contact those clients yearly?
Right. So in a sense, you're combining two things that you know a lot about.
Yeah. So the call centre will call clients and just say, how are you going? Are you happy with everything? Do you want to catch up with John or one of John's team? And that's it, really. And it's just providing that gap in the industry that's going to occur. And normally it takes about 6 years for an act to you know, to actually have to happen. So I reckon by 2014 they're going to do another step and make it stricter. So,
it's a great idea. I mean, I think it's a great idea. You know, and I think,
well, if it works,
I mean,
it
lots
works.
Of people talk about, you know, green industry and, you know, people not commuting and whatever, but you actually have to create those jobs for people not to commute, just not just talk about it.
Totally.
And that really seems like something that you could do.
Yeah, you could do it on Waiheke
quite easily.
Yeah.
And yeah, there are lots of us who, you know, would like to have jobs on the island, but it's not really very feasible. So rather
than
working
or
working
do.
In town.
Yeah, jobs that you can do and have the kids at school and pick the kids up from school. And
that's right.
And, you know.
Yeah. So how are you managing that, you know, kids work balance?
I've got someone else that's going to manage the call centre. I'm not going to operate it at all. I'm just going over to town and just because I know people in the industry. And promoting it, but that's all I'm going to do there. And I'm promoting it naturally just from meetings that I have to go to and courses I have to go to. Work-life balance with kids, it's full on. It's very full on. I don't stop, but I think it's when you are with the kids, you've just got to have quality time with the kids. Like quality, quality time.
I think it's really
time.
Good role modelling as well to for your kids to see you working. I think that's quite a good
thing.
Well,
they walk down to the office. You know, they'll walk down after school and they'll do their homework and stuff. I mean, Lola came down and did an entire sort of a Greek thing on the other computer and, you know, desktop published. Yeah. And so they get that time. And my job means that if I need to stop at three, I can. If I need to go out in the evening for an appointment, I will. If something's happening, I can work around it. I'm not a 9 till 5, so that's the perfect thing about it.
Yeah, and also the kids are growing up. That's what I notice, that they can, you know, look
they
after themselves.
They don't want to hang out with you as much, do they?
Yes, they don't.
We're boring.
Yeah, true. Okay, lovely. So last comment, because you deal with mortgages as well, don't you? Have you got any quick comments on mortgages or things that people should be aware of? One quick tip?
Mortgages are, I don't know if anyone's read the front page of the Week and Herald, but Mortgage Wars. Mortgages are fun. It's great fun. Mortgage breaking.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's good. When you're breaking for
right,
it, it's
okay.
fun because
yeah.
you know, you're going back and forward to the bank and sort of like going, no, that's not good enough. I want a lower rate and all that sort of stuff. So they're fun. You can get quite a bit out of the banks at the moment, but again, case by case.
And you're probably less likely to get something yourself than if you have a mortgage broker, would you say?
Yes, because I don't know how to put it, but I suppose a bank manager in a bank has certain rules that they have to abide by in the fact that they are working for that bank. I don't work for the banks, okay? So I can say to a bank, actually, I'm going to put the application elsewhere if you don't give me the rate that we actually want, that's doable within reason. And that's a difference. And I do all the work. Again,
and
it's one
you
form
also,
and I do it all.
And I, also you're like a second guarantee in a way. It's like you believe in the client. So
yeah, and I'm
it
working
gives
for
them
that
a
client.
Chance to believe in the client as well.
Yeah. And I'm doing the work for them. I'm basically making sure that they get what they need and what they want and it runs smoothly. That's a job. I'll get, you know, I'll make sure everything goes to the lawyer properly. I do all the contact with the bank. I'll make the appointment with the bank manager for the client. I'll make sure it goes to a bank that they want and they like. So yeah, no, it's quite fun actually. I quite enjoy mortgages.
Lovely.
Yeah, it's quite a buzz. Wheeling dealing.
Right. Okay, well that was Nicola Hambly. Nicola,
on.
How do people... Oh yes,
$50 vector.
I have to thank you for that.
No. $50 vector in the post today, Waiheke. Yeah. We got our checks. Did you get your check? You haven't. Well, I've got my check.
Well, explain what it is, because maybe people don't know what you're talking about.
So when there's a power cut, if it's been out for more than, was it 2.5 hours? You get a $50 rebate from Vector. You have to apply for it. So what I think we should do with the $50 rebate is our cinema fund. 100%, if you get it through. Some people can't afford it and some people need the money, so even if they put like $10 towards a cinema fund, it's still $10. But I think the $50 should go towards a new projector, because we wouldn't have had the money anyway and they need the money. What do you reckon?
Yes, I think it's an excellent idea.
Yeah.
And yeah, if people can afford it, then that's wonderful. They should definitely put it in for the cinema fund.
Yeah.
Because that's a lot of money they're trying to raise, $100,000 to go digital. There's an article about it in the Gulf News this week. And yeah. And I mean, it's always a mixed feeling, isn't it? Because what I do like about the cinema, and I think what the projectionists like, is that it's also, you know, you're working with film and you're working with the reels.
Mm.
But of course, the problem with that is that, you know, film is so expensive that by the time we get the reels, you know, the film has kind of been exhausted in other parts of New Zealand, and that's why they're coming to us. That's why we get such a delay in the films.
Mm.
Digital projection is so much cheaper to get around. You can send them as protected files or on memory sticks or whatever drives. So it's a much cheaper way of making copies and getting them here. And of course, the quality. You know, some people don't like all that, you know, grainy lines on the film stuff.
Oh, I do.
Yeah.
It's quite nice, isn't it? We need our cinema.
Yeah.
I need
the cinema.
So
we definitely need digital.
Yeah. We definitely 2 hours need the digital stuff.
Yes, exactly. And
when it's raining.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so great. So you can still apply for that Vector thing. There's a number. What's the number for Vector? Do you know?
I've got it. It's on the Waiheke Community Notice Board on Facebook. It's 303 something.
Yes. In any case, you can call up Vector, and the power cut was last Tuesday, I think. Between about 10 and 2, sometime between 10 and 2. And as long as you give them that information, they investigate if, in fact, there was a power cut in your area at that time, and then they send you a refund.
Is there sort of a cut-off
which you can give to the cinema
to apply? Well, you know, if there's a...
She didn't seem to think there was. The lady I spoke to didn't seem to think there was, because I called up 3 days later because I kept remembering in the evening, and I was like, oh, you know, I'm really apologetic and blah, blah, blah. And she was like, oh, no, it doesn't matter as long as you just tell us the times that the power cut was. The problem is that if you leave it 3 or 4 days, you can't actually remember which day the power cut was.
Anyway, yeah, that's true, actually.
Yeah. So, Nicola, details for you, or, you know, contact details for you, if anyone wanted to get hold of you to have a little chat about mortgages or insurance or
6199
on the island.
I'm actually opposite Soul Kitchen.
Okay.
I share offices with Harrop and Hargrave, so I'm on the other side where John Robertson used to be.
Oh, okay, so Ostend.
So I'm in Ostend, and just with claims on the island as well, I've said to clients that I'm happy to help. Even if policies haven't gone through me and people are claiming and they're not sure how to do it or how to approach it, I'm happy to help. Just come into the office, talk to my office manager, talk to one of us in there, and we'll do it, basically.
Lovely.
We'll get it through.
Thank you, Nicola. Thanks for coming in.
Okay.
Have a lovely day.
Thank you.
Right, great. Back again, Island Life. Nicola has just rushed in to say all her advice is free, and she is really lovely, and I'm sure she'd be very happy to give you some advice on something you were struggling with. I always find it interesting talking to her because I think, oh, you know, there's all these things that you need to know about ACC and et cetera, that you can't be bothered to read yourself. Do you worry about, do you have an insurance broker or mortgage broker out?
Yes, I do.
Right,
yes.
Okay.
And the only thing you need to know about ACC is it's a corrupt organisation that needs to be shut down straight away and replaced with something that actually works.
Oh, no, that's really unfair. Oh,
I'm an unfair person.
Oh, where am I going to start?
But you knew that.
No. Private health insurance, man. The thing is... The cost of drugs, you know, all of that is controlled by huge buying power, which is allowed by having a state-owned insurance company that levies premiums off people. It's a bit like television. Television would not be so crap if it was more nationalised and had a public service.
I utterly disagree with that.
Public service broadcasting mandate.
Television is a dying medium, and it's only kept alive for people of low intelligence, which is why most of the programming is rubbish.
Right, okay, but that's only because I assume that you've spent a lot of time in Anglo-Saxon countries, whereas, you know, like, for example, French television has more of a, you know, people actually talk about what they've seen on television, and it's got some quite interesting programs on it.
I'd have to say, actually, the public broadcasting in Australia is first rate.
Yes.
And Canada's
and it's public.
Not bad, too.
That's right, and it's public,
yes.
Alan.
But that was a while ago. My point is that as a medium, yes, television is dying anyway, because most people aren't bothering to watch it anymore.
Mm. Do you think, I mean, I always think it's a bit chicken and egg that people aren't bothering to watch it because it's crap. And
it
in
is.
Countries where it's, yes, maybe got something more interesting to show, or even here, every occasionally there's a show on that people like or find interesting, or a documentary, and then everyone's talking about it.
I have to admit, if there's anything really interesting I want to watch, I watch it on the internet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think the only thing about the internet, though, is first of all, I don't find it particularly comfortable sitting in front of my computer screen, but maybe I need to set it up more like a TV. And then secondly, I think, I mean, I have this argument with Simon Mansfield. I don't know how many people are actually switched into the internet. I mean, I think if you're... I think there are a lot of people who aren't internet savvy and aren't internet connected, even though we like to think we all are.
Yeah.
I think it's only a relatively small proportion of the population that is.
I've no idea. Most of the people I know are switched onto the internet.
Yes, exactly.
So
and they're all your friends, and you all get on really well.
Right.
Okay. So I can sense there's a slight tension in the air. No, not really. But okay. So let's find something else to disagree on. Anything you've got in there that's
well, I was supposed, of course, to come in this morning and have a look through the papers, but of course,
yes,
it's the middle of winter. It's a really slow news week as usual. The marketplace has virtually nothing. The Gulf News, of course, does have an interesting editorial on the asset sales thing, and there is a splendid letter in here from Ross Gillespie. Well done, Ross. That's an excellent letter. Just keeping the whole horse golf course interface thing alive.
Oh, okay. I wish I'd had time to look at the Gulf News this week. And what's he got to say?
Oh, he's just keeping the debate alive, but also keeping the whole business of what that whole area was originally zoned for.
Right.
And this comparison between what the golf course really want out of it and what they're actually entitled to.
Mm. Now, from what I can understand, all of this would be fairly easily resolved by a reserve management plan. That's what I understand, that you just make a plan around how you want the space to be allocated.
Well, they had a plan originally, I believe. One of the things that interested me, I didn't realise this until Paul Walden raised this point about that whole valley, was that one of the things that it was zoned for was a rifle range.
Mm.
So apparently there was originally plans there for a rifle range. And speaking as an enthusiastic gun owner, I'm all for the rifle range. In fact, I think I want to start campaigning to make sure that we actually get it.
Great.
And because after all, if there's one way to keep golfers and horses apart, is put the rifle range down between the middle of them. That should keep them.
Well, I had this fantasy of posting on Facebook, you know, where they had the horse running around the, the golf course. I had the idea that maybe I should just put down that was the new dirt track racing track planned for, you know, and see what they made of that. But then I just thought, oh no, that would probably be stirring things up a bit too much.
Well, I'm all for stirring things up a bit, but I think myself and a few other friends should really start insisting that the rifle range get built.
Right.
And that those of us who enjoy sports shooting should actually be able to have a gun club down there, and which was apparently what we were originally entitled to.
Mm.
So enough of these horsy people and golfy people.
gun people now.
Let's get a few gun owners down there. That'll really stir things up.
Hmm. Okay, lovely. And maybe we could have a brothel on the corner as well.
Why not indeed, yes.
Great. What else?
Well, let's really have a look at this whole asset sales, because there's this great big march, and I'm sure the ferry into town this morning will be filled with Waiheke's foremost bleating liberals all going in there to shout and make downtown look untidy.
Why are the liberals bleating? I've lost count
of the number of concerned-looking people who've come up to me with petitions going, oh, you'll sign this against asset sales. And it's like, no, I won't.
Mm.
Damned if I will. I'm all for asset sales.
Right, okay. So explain why you're for asset sales.
I want to see this country out of debt as quickly as possible.
Yeah, but hasn't that already been debunked? That asset sales aren't going to, get us out of debt, because basically you're selling things that have a bigger return than the debt they're covering.
I still think it's worth a go. I really do. I mean, what does amuse me, of course, is watching the Labour Party tiptoe around this issue. I mean, they're not exactly providing a lot of leadership. Most of the anti-asset sales stuff seems to have been actually quite spontaneously generated by concerned citizens, which is great. I'm all for that.
But, you know, you should always be looking to Labour for leadership. You should be looking to the Greens. That's what the rest of us do.
Well, I guess so, yes. But, I mean, no, the Labour Party have a job to do, and they've got an election to win next time round, and they're really not providing much leadership on this issue. I guess because if they were in government at the moment, they'd be having to look at much the same kind of thing.
Mm. Well, I don't know. I mean, they are also against asset sales. I mean, they're also backing the petition to take asset sales
to
a referendum.
Yes, but they're doing it in a fairly half-hearted manner.
Yeah, but I mean, they're not really a grassroots organisation. You know, Labour and the National Party are both, you know, established political parties, whereas the Greens or MANA or, you know, some of these other parties work more at a grassroots level and might be more expected to go out with petitions,
yes,
and et cetera, et cetera. But why do you think it's a good idea to sell a company that's all these companies apparently are running as efficiently as they possibly could be? So that's another argument for selling them. So why would you sell something that's a state asset that's running really efficiently, that's got like a high return on investment, to get nothing back at the end of it?
I'm all for buying shares in it. This was one of the questions that came up this week on Facebook. Somebody was saying, if, as it seems likely, that the asset sales will go ahead, would you buy shares in the various companies offered? Personally, yes.
Okay, I see. So what you're saying is that you see it as a way of investing.
Yes.
And so that's why you're against it.
Because
I mean, that's why you're
I'm all for
asset sales.
Because there's this thing they say, but, you know, why should you buy something that's yours already? It's not yours already. You have no control over these state-owned assets. They're run by the public sector. And I'd like to see more things like that in private ownership.
Mm. But the thing is,
I'm
in
favour of private ownership of things.
At the same time, if you buy and sell things, the cost of them goes up. So presumably, you'll also be paying more for your electricity bill. Though you've got more shares, you'll also be paying more for your electricity. And if people are speculating on your electricity, your family will also be spending more, and your friends will also be spending more on electricity.
My electricity bill is so horrendously high anyway.
Right, okay, so you figure if you own the shares in the company,
it would
you'll
make
be
no
off.
Difference to me. My electricity bill is just ridiculous. I keep waiting for policemen to turn up on my doorstep and say, right, come on, where's the hydroponic laboratory?
Right, okay.
And then I'll be able
and
to...
And where is the hydroponic laboratory?
No, I'd be able to take them downstairs and say, look, I've got an enormous cold room. You see, I... cold room. Great big walk-in chiller that I use for all my yeast growing and beer stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my monthly electricity bill, it's so horrendous anyway.
Right, so you wouldn't be bothered if that increased fourfold then?
Fourfold? Oh, I don't see that happening.
Well, not in the next year, obviously. But, I mean, if you speculate on a basic commodity, then that's what happens. That the cost of the commodity increases beyond, you know, bears no relationship to the actual cost of production of the electricity.
Yes, but if we're talking about a commodity that's been artificially controlled through state ownership for the last few years anyway...
Mm.
I'm all for letting the market rip and seeing what happens.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Well, I have to say that's incredibly depressing, but, you know, someone's got to think like that. Otherwise, we wouldn't have anything to talk about.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Good. Right then. Lovely. So what else have we got? Anything? So you won't be marching down. You won't be going down to have a giggle at the people who are protesting against
asset sales. I can't be bothered. I've got a job to go to. But the one thing that I am really curious with is, do the folks who oppose sales of these assets, would they also oppose New Zealand ownership of overseas assets? Do we have a moral obligation not to buy into other countries' economies?
Well, we'd have to have some money that we could do that with, wouldn't we?
Well, we do.
I mean, and I think we do. That's the other thing. People do, you know, you don't know where banks are putting their money, and a lot of it is going into, you know, Chinese mines or Australian mines or whatever. So in that way, you are investing in other people's countries' assets. Or
right, but do you feel we have a there is a moral responsibility not to buy other countries' goods?
I don't know. I'd never really thought about it.
Oh.
But
I'm sure none of the other people marching down there would have either.
Well, I guess, you know, in an ideal world, then yes, no, I wouldn't be that keen on investing in that. But sadly, the way the world economy works, that's what everyone does. They invest in each other's economies. But I think that's an interesting point around another issue, which was that whole thing of the farms. What were they called?
Oh, the Kraffer farms.
The Kraffer farms, because there you had a different situation in the sense that the government was investing in a... The Chinese government is investing in a local farm.
Right.
And I thought that gave rise to issues of sovereignty. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I had no problem with the sale to the Chinese.
Right.
I mean, it would have been nice if somebody in New Zealand could have bought it, but given that that wasn't apparently feasible...
So it didn't bother you that it was a state-owned Chinese enterprise that's buying it?
Not really.
The fact that it was a private company from another country or
the way
a Chinese
I, the way
government,
I see any kind of Chinese
really
investment is that the rate at which the Chinese are destroying their own country... I think before too long we'll be buying all that stuff back off them, just as we are with a lot of... I remember, 20 years ago, there was a lot of fuss, particularly in Australia, about the amount of land that was being bought by Japanese companies and so forth. Most of that land has now been bought back at fire sale rates because the Japanese economy went pear-shaped.
Mm.
So as far as Chinese stuff, it's not like it's going to be forever. If you look at the way China's going... They're shot at being a superpower. They're lucky to have a decade of the good times before a lot of that stuff all starts reverting to us anyway, because there's no way they're going to be able to keep it going. But at least in the meantime, all those people who work on those farms, at least they've got a guarantee of an income.
Mm, but they'd have a guaranteed income if it was bought by someone else for a little bit less anyway.
Well, they would. But, I mean, at least the sale got
And you
done.
Don't know that. I mean, and presumably a government is always going to be... it's interesting. I just thought it was, the idea of a foreign power buying land in your country, I did find quite peculiar. But anyway.
Yeah. But as I said, I think it'll revert to us before too long.
Mm. Okay, fair enough. Yeah. And, okay, so what were your thoughts on TVNZ 7 then? Sell it.
I could never get TVNZ 7.
No, nor could I, actually, I have to say.
Yeah, living where I do in Crescent Valley... The guy who deals with all the TV aerials came around and he said, "Yeah, basically, you're never ever going to get a signal down here.
Mm.
We can get one and two, and occasionally Maori."
Mm. We have really good reception for Maori, and I have to say, I love Maori television.
Yes,
it's really good, and I think for me, that's what I like about what I see as being public service broadcasting. Mm.
But as far as Seven goes, I really have no opinion on it because I could never see it anyway.
Mm.
It's like Prime. Prime shows a lot of stuff I'd love to see, but I can never see it.
Mm. Okay, good. Right, is there anything else in there or in the papers that you've noticed?
Hardly in the papers, but I know there was... What was the subject you wanted to talk about?
Oh, yes, I was quite interested in that whole thing on circumcision, actually. It was something that came up on Facebook, this...
it's been much in the news. Of course, Germany is the first country to actually say, no, this counts as mutilation. You can't.
Yes, and it's quite interesting for me because, my father is Jewish, but we've never, ever grown up with Jewish traditions. But it was never... both my brother and my son, it was just a question of, basically that's just what we do and that's just how it works. And, it never really came up as part of the conversation. And in a sense, and yet, things like female, genital mutilation or, even things like wearing a headscarf, or there are lots of other things that come up as cultural practice that people debate a lot. And yet,
I don't think
this
there's any
seem
debate
to come up.
On female circumcision. I mean, that is just bestial.
Yes.
Any culture that condones that is a culture that has no place in the human race.
Yes, nonetheless, I think the point that Hans was making on Facebook was the fact that you should, that circumcision is a kind of mutilation, and therefore the child should be in a position to decide for themselves when they're an adult if that's what they want to do or not.
Yes.
It shouldn't be a cultural practice that's decided for them.
I tend to agree with that.
Mm. Yeah.
As a cultural practice, it has certainly died out in the UK when I was born.
Mm.
It was not something that ever really came up.
Mm. Whereas it's interesting, when for my son, we ended up having, I mean, we investigated, and obviously we weren't going to get a rabbi to be, you know, whacking out a knife or anything, but finding a doctor, there were, you know, it was relatively straightforward finding a doctor who would do it. And one of the things that he was saying is that many people of his generation had been circumcised because, of course, their parents had been in Egypt or in you know, Gallipoli or whatever, not their parents, but in the Second World War, on that kind of Mediterranean front or whatever, and they'd had, you know, they'd suffered illness as a result of, you know, not being circumcised, not being able to be clean enough without water.
Yes, and whereas in the 21st century, there's no excuse not to be completely clean. But yes,
thought it was interesting. I just thought from my own perspective it was interesting, because it's one of those cultural practices that, because it's always been around me and that's just been the way it is, it's not something I've ever sort of questioned or thought about. And so it was really interesting to just, you know, have that kind of raised as a... And I suddenly saw the other side of it, that thing of, you know, having something that's a cultural practice that people just kind of accept and don't think about, suddenly being kind of held up to the light.
Yeah. There are, you know, there's any number of men who are very annoyed that they were circumcised as children. And, because, yes, I mean, this we're talking something seriously irreversible.
That's interesting, though, because I think a lot of those men aren't necessarily Jewish men.
No.
They're people who didn't necessarily do it as part of their cultural tradition, and those are the ones who are, I think, the most annoyed that it was done, because their parents maybe thought it would be good for health reasons or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think within the Jewish tradition and the Muslim tradition, and, you know, there are other religions as well. My mother's a Parsi. I think they also circumcise the boys. You know, I think those kids aren't usually against it. I mean, I don't know. It's not something I've investigated or anything.
Well, I mean, I just take the basic position that if something is done for religious purposes, that's not a good excuse. You know, every day the line between religion and psychosis grows ever thinner. You know, it's no surprise that atheism is becoming so prevalent. Religion increasingly is something that you seem to want to protect your children from, not encourage them to
take part. But again, I think it depends where you grow up. You know, I think, you know, white, you know, Anglo-Saxon cultures, yes, religion is dying, but in a lot of places it's not. People are actually quite, you know, comfortable and confident within their religions. And, you know, trying to go against your religion also causes some people a lot of tension. I mean, I'm just talking. To be honest, I'm not religious at all, so I don't really give a toss either
way.
I'm just saying,
you know, I think any religious argument is automatically rubbish as far as I'm concerned, particularly when it comes to something as irreversible as that.
Yeah, no, interesting.
But it will be very strange to watch how Germany gets on with having actually banned it. Because already there are, you know, cries of... protest from particularly from Jewish.
Well, that's
groups.
Right, because it's mostly going to be those people who do it as part of their cultural practice that are you know, against it, because the people for health reasons, they're not going to be necessarily that committed one way or another. They're just trying to, like, you know, do what's best for their kids. Or,
there was an interesting debate on Facebook this week. I think it was Kevin Appleton, who of course is a doctor. He was firmly in favour of keeping circumcision. He says, yeah, a lot of good health reasons for it and so forth. It's a tricky one. It really is. I mean,
well, I guess it depends on how you think the world is going. I mean, if you think it's going to turn to shit and we're all going to be like surviving a, you know, a drought or an ice age within 10 years, then maybe
which I don't believe.
You'd be circumcising your children as just one more way of protecting yourself against the future.
But given that the future is going to be fabulous and we're all going to be happy, healthy and richer than we are now.
That's right. Yeah. And sitting on our electricity shares while other
absolutely.
People freeze to death.
Yes.
Good, lovely. Right, anything else that you thought of chatting about? I have to say, the one thing, it was from a couple of weeks ago, but I did find it quite disturbing on that Facebook page, was that beauty pageant with
Holocaust survivors.
With Holocaust
Wasn't
survivors.
Wasn't that curious? Yes.
I was just, I just couldn't get over that. I just didn't know what to think. I was, any thoughts on that? I was just so appalled I couldn't quite... It just seemed like such a... I'll tell you what it was. Basically, there was a beauty pageant for people who'd survived...
The Holocaust.
So these people were all between, you know, 70 and 90 years old, and they were all dressed up with tiaras. And, yeah.
As far as I can see, nobody put a gun to their heads and made them do it.
No, they were obviously really...
a lovely time.
Yes,
so
exactly. Yes, exactly. And so if they're having a lovely time, then I suppose it's fine. And they're not harming anyone.
You know, this is in Israel, a country that has... every reason to keep alive awareness of the Holocaust. And
Well, I thought it was quite an interesting take on the Holocaust industry. You know, making money out of the Holocaust, or,
yes,
you know, making entertainment out of the Holocaust. I think that's what I found so disturbing about the whole thing.
It did come across as slightly disturbing, but then again, hey, as I say,
yeah,
they did it all, did it voluntarily. So.
Yes, yes.
Very hard to have a problem with that.
Alan, thanks so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
Did you want
ever.
To talk about something else?
No, no.
Okay.
I'm all done.
Right, so I'm going to put on this...
I think I've annoyed enough people for now.
Not at all. I think it's great to have a bit of debate. I wish more people would come on that, you know, you can have a bit of a Barney with.
Yes.
You know? I must get on next time on my show. I am going to try and get a... you know, a couple of people to have a Barney with.
Yeah. I always find it very funny, you know, that when I sort of voice... opinions that are contrary to the sort of the prevailing mushy liberal views on this island, I get people coming up to me, but I thought you were a nice person. I am a nice person, but I'm just don't just always agree with the
So do you do it just to be different, or
yes,
do you do it because you genuinely believe what you're saying?
I
you just like talking
difficult.
Crap.
I do.
Yes.
I just like winding people up.
Yes, well that's
which is why I love
Facebook.
Do
you think that's an English trait? Do you think that thing of liking to wind people up is...
I'd say it's more of a Scottish trait.
Right.
I know I don't sound Scottish at the moment, but I'd say it's more of a Scottish thing, yes. I like to be contrary.
Right.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
We're back on air with Bridget and Lucy, who have been, who had their first night of My Mother Never Said I Should. Is that right? No. Okay, hang on.
It was close.
Go on.
My Mother Said I Never Should.
Okay.
This is a play by Charlotte Keatley.
Lovely, great. And you were just telling me where that came from.
Oh, well, it's from a nursery rhyme that I certainly learnt when I was a little girl, and English, not just English, probably. My mother said I never should play with the gypsies in the wood. If I did, she would say, naughty little girl, to disobey. That's the whole rhyme.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So is it something about gypsies?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I mean, I didn't... I'm kind of the generation under, so I didn't learn it as a kid.
No,
I've probably
never
not
heard
in New Zealand
either.
Nursery rhyme, but I think it's all about, it's kind of a kind of same era of Ring-a-Ring-a-Rosie, you know, that whole like dark undertone to the nursery rhyme. It's that, yeah, that's what I've gathered from it anyway.
Right. Okay, great. So tell us about this play then. What are you guys doing in it? Okay, good. So tell us what you guys are doing in that play.
Well, it's quite, the relationship between us two is quite complex. You'd probably have to go and see the show to actually quite understand.
Are you mother and daughter or friends?
Yes.
Don't want to give too much away.
Yeah,
I see. Okay.
The whole play really is about analysing the different relationships of women and how complex they can be within a family. And it's not necessarily a dark thing. It's more just a part of these women's lives. But yes, she's been my mother. She's portrayed as my mother in the play.
Oh, okay. Great. Good. And are you enjoying doing this play?
Well, we're finding it an enormous challenge because we play our characters at different ages. There's a lot of costume changes. Some of them, it feels as if you've only got 2 seconds to change your costume in. Mm. And it works on many different levels. I think it's stretching us all as actors, which is really brilliant. And it's wonderful. It's a really good... a good experience.
Lovely. Yeah. Good. Yes. So when's it on?
It's on tonight.
Yes, the opening that night was last night, and we'll have another show tonight, and then again next week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday night.
Oh, Thursday, Friday and Saturday. Yeah. Lovely. Good. Yeah. So, yes, and where do we get tickets?
You can book from iSight or Artworks, and tickets are $20 or $22 for premium seats, and $18, I think, for students. Yeah.
Okay, lovely, good. Is it suitable for children?
Probably not. It's not overly rude or anything. It's not really that. It's just
boring.
Yeah, for kids. It's just a really beautiful kind of play, and there's a lot of what we were just talking about earlier. It's post women's liberation kind of
post feminism.
Yeah, it's yeah. So it's all about that kind of side of things, you know, political movements and so. Lovely. Really great for adults, but children might not quite appreciate that.
Lovely.
Which is fair enough.
Okay, and have you learnt more about, Lucy, it's probably before your time, but have you learnt more about, I don't know, women's struggles or things around women, or has there been anything particularly interesting?
Yeah, it's been a real insight into how women of this time struggled. You know, it's like, it goes right back to my great-grandmother, and she is 87 at the end of the play, so she was born in 1900, I think. Yeah, and so it's right back to her era, and it follows all of our stages of life, so it's been a real insight, actually.
So Lucinda Peterkin's directing the play, and who are the other actors then?
Hayley Hailstone.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have Linda Savage.
Right, lovely. Mm-hmm. So Hayley was in Abigail's Party, as yes. were you, Bridget?
Yes.
Yes. Good. And are you having as much fun with this play?
Well, personally, I found it more of a challenge, actually, than Abigail's Party. But I think the fun is just about to begin. Because we've just had our first night, and it went fairly smoothly. So now it's going to really get going.
Lovely, good. So just a reminder, if you want to go, don't leave it till the last night, because when they did Abigail's Party, they couldn't, you know, they didn't have enough tickets. They ran out of tickets for the last night. So try and get in tonight, next Thursday or Friday, as well as the closing night Saturday, because otherwise it will be too late.
Yeah, and it's all starting at 7:30, every performance.
Okay, lovely, good. So starts at 7:30, up at Artworks, tickets from iSight and Artworks. Lovely, good. Okay, well, thank you so much, ladies, and enjoy the rest of your show.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye. Okay, lovely. Right, well, I guess it's a bit of a short show today, so we'll have a couple more tracks. We've got Bob Marley, Three Little Birds, and then I'll just put in the Arctic Monkeys and the Black Seeds, and that'll be the end of Island Life for this week. I'm sorry it's a short show, but it's been a bit of an emergency show, and it's usually... Jan. Oh, and Tara's here. Hello, Tara. Now, Tara.
Hi.
Tara's my daughter, and... You're off to Fiji, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Do you want to tell us about that?
Well, we're going off to Fiji for 3 months, then coming back for 2 weeks, and then going again for 3 months.
Right.
So we're having a leaving party today. That's why it's in a rush.
Okay. Yes, because Mum's got to go and bake some cakes and run around planning party games now. Yes, good. And Tara's off to Fiji. Lovely. So big changes afoot.
Mm-hmm.
And you're off to stay with your dad. That'll be fun. Okay, so we're going to go off and plan this party. So everyone have a lovely Saturday, and you're listening to Waiheke Radio.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.